The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management. This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston.
Welcome to Tube Talk on WRCA Radio.
Oh, give me a home where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the sky are not cloudy all day. Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. How often at night, when the heavens are bright, with a light from the glittering stars, have I stood here amazed and asked as I gazed if their glory exceeds that of ours. Flows leisurely down the stream, where the graceful white swan goes gliding along like a maid in a heavenly dream. And I would not exchange my home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play.
Well, that's something you don't hear a lot of. Frank Sinatra, not necessarily equated frequently with Oh, Home on the Range, but there's a lot of that type of stuff that goes on this program. Welcome to Tube Talk. My name is Paul Burish, your happy host of Tube Talk on 1330 AM radio, on the glorious standard broadcast band, and streaming on the internet. Oh, yes, once again, the show you've been waiting for all week. You know, I hope. I really do. News announcement. Radio 43, Antique Radio Show, Sunday, February 19th. Just a reminder, folks, February 19th, 2012, 8 a.m. to noon at the Westford Regency Inn, 219 Littleton Road, Westford, Mass. 85 tables, over 60 dealers. The public is welcome. The parking is free. The admission is $10. We'd really love to see you. Good chance to check out the antique collecting hobby, antique radio collecting hobby, the coolest hobby on the face of the planet. So hopefully we string together a few lucid moments here this evening as I've just emerged from two trips, two different connections on the subway, and we're going to have some fun radio conversation, some nifty music, and hopefully a real swell hour together.
Howard
would you like to swing on a star? Carry moonbeams home in a jar and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears, kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny and his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a pig?
A pig is an animal with dirt on his face. His shoes are a terrible disgrace.
He has no manners when he eats his food.
He's fat and lazy and extremely rude.
But if you don't care a feather or a fish, you may grow up to be a pig.
Or would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are, Rudy?
Or would you rather be a fish?
A fish won't do anything but swim in a brook. He can't write his name or read a book.
To fool the people is his only thought.
And though he's slippery, he still gets caught.
But then if that sort of life is what you wish, you may grow up to be a fish. The jumped up slippery fish, and all the monkeys are in the zoo.
Every day you meet quite a few.
So you see, it's all up to you. You can be better than you are. You could be swinging on a star.
Let's swing a little more with Bing.
Oh, give me land, lots of land, under starry skies above. Don't fence me in.
Let me ride through the wide open country that I love.
Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself. In the evening breeze, listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in.
Just turn me loose, let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western sky. Let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise.
I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses. Cause I can't look at hovels and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in.
Give me land, lots of land, under starry skies. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself
western skies.
On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see those mountains rise.
Bum, 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 bum. I want to ride to the range where the west commences and gaze at the moon till I lose my senses and I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. No.
Papa, don't you fence me.
That was Bing Crosby with the Andrews Sisters from one of his Philco radio hours. Thanks for joining us tonight. This is Tube Talk on WRCA, where we stroll down Nostalgia Street to the musical world of civility and gentility and really good music. We have a guest. We'll be joined by Joe Napoli from Third Bay Radios with us shortly. And while he's getting cozy in the comfy radio room, a little more music.
Sorry.
Okay, here it is. We're gonna have a supper. We'll eat some food that's red.
And at the head of the table, we'll place Brother Henry's chair.
Invite all the local big dogs. We'll laugh and talk and eat. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat.
Today I'll go to market, buy up a lot of fish.
Well, that will thrill Brother Henry, 'cause fish is his special dish.
Get a large can of molasses.
Have something really sweet. But we'll save the bones for Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. Henry is not a drinker. He rarely takes a nip.
He don't need a napkin,
'cause the things he eats don't drip. Blip.
One day we had a banquet. It really was a bake.
They started off with short ribs, then finished up with steak.
But when the feast was over,
Brother Henry just kept his seat. And we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. It was most proper, right down to demitasse.
From soup to lox and bagels, and pheasant under glass.
Class, we thought the chops were mellow.
He said his chops were beat.
Reet, we served the bones to Henry Jones, 'cause Henry don't eat no meat. He's Eggman, Henry don't eat no meat. He loves a pullet. Henry don't eat no meat. A vegetarian. Henry?
Come in, Mother.
Soup's on.
Shine, little glowworm glimmer. Shine, little glowworm glimmer. Lead us less too far we wander. Love's sweet voice is calling yonder. Shine, little glowworm glimmer. Hey there, don't get dimmer. Light the path below above. Lead us on to love. Thank you.
LBC. Turn on the AC and the DC.
This night could use a little brightening. Light up, you little old buck of lightning. When you gotta glow, you gotta glow.
Glow, little glowworm, glow.
Glow, little glowworm, glow. And glimmer, swim through the sea of night. Little swimmer, thou aeronautical bow weevil. Illuminate yon wood's primeval. See how the shadows deep and darken. You and your chick should get to sparkin'. I got a gal that I love so. Glow, little glowworm, glow.
Little glowworm, turn the key on. You are equipped with taillight neon. You got a cute fast pocket Mazda, which you can make both slow and faster.
I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you're out to make a sign to.
I got a gal that I love so. Glow, little glowworm, put on a showworm.
Thanks for listening to Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM. This is the show for the antique radio collector, the music lover, and the people who still just like listening to something on the glorious standard broadcast band. We're here for you, and we are delighted to have in our studio today, we have an in-studio guest, just, you know, another sign that we're really coming up in the radio world here at Tube Talk. We have Joe Napoli with us today. He's from Third Bay Radios. You can find him at info@thirdbayradio.com. He's recently relocated to the Massachusetts area. He's up here in the greater Boston area now, originally from New York. And you may have seen some of his stuff posted on Radio Attic. He is a repair guy. He does some beautiful work. He works on radio. He works on antique audio. He works on jukeboxes. He works on a lot of different stuff. Joe, thanks for being on. We appreciate you being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
And maybe you can give us a little story here, how you got started on Third Bay. how did you get the name, you know, Third Bay? Why Third Bay, not Fourth Bay? Why Third Bay Radios?
I once had a three-car garage, and it was the third bay, and I promised my wife if I was going to do this, I'd only use the third bay. It slowly wound up using the second bay and a little bit of the first bay. She was kind of annoyed about that, but it was fine. I started about 5 or 8 years ago doing this, and I picked up a Crosley, a console. I think it was a Super 8. And just loved it. Found it in an antique shop, wasn't working, got a good price on it. And a friend of mine showed me how to just redo the caps, plug it in and see if it works. And ever since then, I've been like an addict towards these. I love bringing them back to life.
Well, you know, it's funny because when Jerry Katz, who's been on the show before, mentioned you to me, he said you'd be a great guest on the show. He holds Joe in very high regard. And it's funny because, you know, you got to be careful with these age remarks, you know, because I don't consider myself very old, though some mornings I feel a lot older than I really am. So Jerry goes to me, he goes, well, you got to meet this guy, Joe, because he's the future. He's the future of the radio collecting hobby. You know, we got a lot of older people in it. How old are you, Joe?
I don't know.
Do you want to confess? You can give us a something.
Right now I'm 37. I'm surprised I'm
he's
the young
30-something, and he's the young guy here. That's, yeah. Well, that's, you know, but it is good to see somebody a little younger getting into the hobby, because so many of the guys we meet at swap meets and in the radio clubs are these guys who really lived this whole period of time. They were around in the 40s and 50s, and it's nice when you go and you see younger people get involved. I know down at the New Jersey Antique Radio Club, they have they do outreach. They try to get young kids involved, and it's great when you bring somebody in and you show them a Zenith shutter dial, and the little kids go, ooh, and they go, ah.
Yeah, so, I got a little joke at some of the antique shows I used to do. I sometimes bring a jukebox or two, and I see the mothers walking by with the little kids and stuff, and I say, hey, you want to check out my MP3 player? And they're looking at me because they know what an MP3 player is, but they do not know what a jukebox is, which is probably one of the reasons I enjoy doing jukeboxes and radios so much. It's kind of surprising for people to look at this, and like you said, a lot of the older people are like, I remember this. Is this a real one? And this is great. And it's one of the main reasons I do this kind of thing on the side, because it's just so much fun to see people light up and really check it out. And they're like, is this real? Yeah, it's real. It's just been rebuilt.
We have a friend of our family's, and he has I'm not sure if it's a Wurlitzer or a Seaburg jukebox. I'm not a jukebox guy. So
you got a good start right there.
So, you know, we're down at his house one day, and I'm over there looking around, and, oh, wow, this looks cool. And he's, well, yeah, it worked better and blah, blah, blah. Well, apparently he had somebody, and he had it restored at one point, and then he had somebody come out to fix it. He had a bad repair experience with whoever came out to fix it, but it's not working 100%. But he said when it was, he has two granddaughters. One's about 10 or 11 now, and the other one I think is about 5 or 6. And he said, you know, I didn't think they'd really be interested at all because, like, the 11-year-old has an iPhone. But, you know, she came in, and she pressed the button, and she saw the record come down and drop. And then, and she was just absolutely fascinated, you know. And for him to be able to play her some songs, you know, because he's a big Elvis guy from, you know, his childhood. It's a great way to connect. And it's in some ways when the stuff – these kids never have seen this, and you just kind of bring it out of the black box, they really get excited about it.
The story – I got to tell you this one real quick. When I was a little boy, my uncle, who was really into this – he was in the Air Force, he did radios, and I did the same growing up. But when I was little, he purchased a Seaburg 100C, which is the one from Happy Days. But he bought it from a German social club, and he bought it. And my father went with my uncle's three brothers, and he went out to the third floor in Brooklyn, New York, and picked this thing up and carried it down flights of stairs. I didn't know this. I was too young. I was maybe 5 or 6. But years later, my uncle passes away. He passes the jukebox from uncle to uncle. And eventually, my uncle hears that I'm doing this. And he goes, come visit me. Bring a U-Haul. I'm like, okay. I open the garage door, and there's that jukebox from when my father dragged it out.
That's
it was
great.
Cool. So long story short, he says, what are you going to do with it? I'm going to fix it up and use it, Uncle Tony. He was all over it. He's like, good answer. It's yours. Take it home. So I took it home. This is like 3 or 4 years ago. And since then, you know, I have a daughter, 5 years old. And you mentioned, you know, the next generation. I have mine in the same 100C in my dining room, and we turn on like almost every night. And she likes the One-Eyed Flying Purple Peeper Leader song.
Oh, who wouldn't like that?
And I have like 10 songs like that she knows all the keys by heart. And like you said, they love to see the record load up, and they wait anxiously.
Before.
Yeah, she knows enough to move her fingers away before it pops back up. And I have no concern with these units because I know people are older. Yeah, but if you do certain things, they're just as good as the day they came out of the factory. I don't have to worry about anything else. And they're tons of fun because the way it glows, it lights up, and the audio that comes out of them in that jukebox is a big 15-inch field speaker. And when you step back about 4 or 5 feet, the sound that comes out of it, the bass and the high ends. Now, granted, it's not a Bose system. It's a different sound. It's tube amplified, and it sounds amazing. And you just stand back, and you're just in awe. I'm like, that sounds incredible.
Right. You know, not to rip the Bose system, but you know, it's funny because
no.
Well, this is nothing compared to where I go sometimes. I have to be careful though. I mean, it's a piece of our time. It is what it is. But I'll talk to a lot of older guys involved in the hobby, and you'll mention a Bose. And they just kind of make this face and they go, that thing is deaf as a post. It can't pick up anything. Well, you know, part of the whole hobby for a lot of the older guys was doing DXing, and they're used to having a small, maybe 6-7 tube set that they can put on a table at home, and they can pick up Cincinnati, they can pick up Chicago, they can pick up Toronto, they can get Baltimore. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the knocks on some of these more modern radios is they don't have the sensitivity, they don't have the audio output stage necessarily. It's a modern device. They figure you're going to probably play a CD, maybe listen to FM, which is generally speaking pretty short range. You know, it's not a long distance type of radio signal. But it's funny, you know, you talk about a different sound. Not only is the sound different, especially in a lot of the vintage radios, the performance is much different. And in some cases, it's much better. It's just a lot different.
Yes, I have a sister-in-law. I gave her a beautiful Philco console, and it actually has a line in the bank in the back, a line in. So I recapped it, made it work, looks pretty good. She loves it, she tells me, because she takes her cell phone. She's on some kind of Wi-Fi, and then she plugs it into the back of the radio. I set that up for her with a simple cable. So now she can listen to what she wants, and it has an amazing tube sound coming out of this beautiful Philco console. And it was such a good match. And I'm noticing more and more customers like that. They find these radios at a trade show. And they say, can we plug anything else? I mean, AM is great, and I like listening to AM.
Sure.
But when you can't find anything you want to listen to, you can plug your MP3 player, which doesn't sound very good because the audio quality is bad on most of them. But when you start plugging a CD player or anything else in the back, it's amazing that you made something like 1940s, functional again. And a lot of the units today, it actually sounds better than if you went and bought like a little, you know, iPod loading dock heard. Not knocking anything, but there is a unique sound that comes out of these old radios, which really makes things sound better to me.
Yeah, and not to mention there's plenty of volume, you know. And I get the impression that in a lot of these sets too, it wasn't, you know, you might listen to that in your downstairs. You know, you just turn it up and you'd listen to whatever you were listening to, the ball game or whatever, the news or your favorite radio program, whatever it was, mystery, suspense, whatever. But you can hear them because they do give you a nice, clear volume. And the other nice thing, too, is without even making an extra modification to when it comes out of the factories, a lot of times you'll find players that have radio sets that have a jack in the back. You know, it's designed for the old RCA jack that might run out of your phonograph. And if you're lucky enough to have a set that has something like that, you could hook up your CD player with no problem. If you have a little good performing FM radio, run the line out, run that in, and you've got a nice FM sound. And the nice thing is, too, it's that big speaker, very rich sound, and it's very hard to duplicate. It's something that you don't only hear on a tube set.
Yeah, so even the smaller tabletop that you see at the shows, you get inside and you realize there's a big speaker in there, usually a six, and even a smaller ones. There's a couple Zeniths out there. It's like I've plugged in after recapping, and they have a bass adjustment, and it just sounds really good. And there's keep your eyes open for a small purple Zenith with a big gold dial. I wish I remember the model number off the top of my head. But I was amazed when I rebuilt this one. It was so nice that I went and bought myself one after someone dropped theirs off.
Was it a...
It was a tabletop. It was like a purple. It has a handle on top. Big gold chrome front.
Yep, they have a great chassis in those.
Oh, and the sound quality is amazing. My friend came over. He was just checking out what he's doing. I had it playing in the background. And I was working away. He's like, is that radio? And he was amazed. He goes, oh, wow, that's amazing. And luckily, that one is AM and FM, too.
Right, so it was pretty neat. And a lot of those have jacks too, and it's interesting because, you know, somewhere along the line, and you always want, you know, if you're into conspiracy theories out there, people, there's my conspiracy theory that the stereo hi-fi component industry wanted to kill radio. You know, it just, they didn't really want to kill it, but at some point things gravitate, and the gravitation was towards component sets with separate tuners. But Zenith in particular was a holdout, and they were making good sounding AM FM sets well into the 60s, hand-wired chassis, right here in Chicago, and the stuff sounds absolutely great. And I've had another fellow on. He's a member of the New England Club. We've talked a lot about European sets, Grundigs, Blaupunkts,
I was just waiting
Phillips.
To say that.
And, you know, again, you know, his opinion is, well, in Europe, for a lot of different reasons, he said TV and stereo didn't overwhelm them as quick as it did here. And even well into the 60s, a lot of these manufacturers were making great-sounding stuff. And it's a treat to listen to. And the other thing that's interesting is there's a classical station we have around here. It's 99.5. Mm-hmm. It used to be out of Waltham, and I picked it up with no problem. If I listen on a modern AM-FM set or even on my stereo, which is a fairly nice, it's a Yamaha tuner, I have trouble picking up 99.5. It's moved up to Lowell now. I bring out a Zenith AM-FM. No problems whatsoever. It comes through clear as a bell, and it sounds great. So, you know, don't give up. You know, they can be restored, and if you're lucky enough to know a competent repair professional like Joe Napoli at Third Bay Radio, yes, they can play again. So,
yeah, and I just got a comment, like you said, with the Zenith, they had a very nice set. If you could find a nice shutter dial, even though, I don't want to say lower models, but the other models, they had a basic set, which was very nice. Also, you mentioned the European models, the Grundigs, the Opus 7 I once worked on. I opened that up. It's a hi-fi set, but it has several different bands, and I can't speak highly enough of the sound of coming to that radio. It's about a tabletop. It's usually really nice, but the funny story is I had a bunch of my friends working on a Seberg Jukebox 480, which turned into a nightmare, but we got it going. But we had that radio playing in the background, Opus 7, and we had to stop because Oye Como Va came on with the in the background, and we all like, someone's coming in the door, and we like all turned around like looking, who's there? And it turns out it was just a beautiful radio, had such a great sound quality.
Well, a lot of the European stuff is really, if you're a collector, depending on what buttons, you know, you're subject to having pushed if you're a radio collector, a lot of these European sets are the complete package, because you've got in a nice cabinet, usually with a fairly ornate dial glass, so you've got foreign cities listed for the shortwave. A lot of them have some version of a tuning eye, so
yes.
We've got our tuning
yes.
eye.
And those are available. I found those, and some man overseas has a whole stockpile from, and they're gorgeous once you get a new one in there.
So you've got the nice dial light, you've got a tuning eye, and you go and you look inside the thing, and you might have a multiple speaker array. a couple of tweeters. You might have a mid-range. You might have two mid-range and two tweeters. So you look in the back of it, and you say, wow, this is looks pretty advanced stuff. It's really cool.
You got to do research on that stuff, but it really is. It's a nice radio. What else? There's a couple of Philcos out there. But with the Opus and the Grundig, you got to really make sure a lot of the parts are there, if not all the parts are there, because I think the parts are harder to come
by.
They
can be hard to come
by. As opposed to a Zenith, where you can find a Zenith chassis and find what you need. There's a lot of nice sets out there. You just got to do a little digging and find what you like. And then I recommend trying to see if there's a line in the back, because that does help. If there's no line in it, there's a way around it. They actually make hobby transmitters in AM, and I've done that before, where I've actually tuned in, you know, certain channels on FM, put into the transmitter. I'm listening to whatever I want on all the radios in the house, and that was nice because there was no wires.
Now, what's the sound quality like with those little mini home setups?
Not good. Yeah. I'll put it that way. It's decent, but if you're looking to rattle the windows with Frank Sinatra, it's not going to do it. You're going to have to wait for Swinging with Sinatra. I don't know if that's local or not. But, yeah, it's I like
it
the
is.
Line. Yeah, that's a great show. I like tuning on it. But if you look for a line in, not even that, there's a lot of good sets. Like you said, the speaker array, too, the 12-inch. And just see what's in there. Did you want to go through pointers? Look, I think people have a pretty good idea what
they're looking
for.
Well, we've done that before on the show. Yeah. We've gone over sort of some do's and don'ts and things to look for and things to shy away from. And actually, I did that with our pal Ross, who's Ross Hochstrasser, who, if you come out to Radio 43 in Westford, he's going to be out there. He's the special event chairman, and boy, is he a happy guy about that. But Ross's big thing is, right now, communications receivers. But he used to work for Grundig. He was a factory service representative. Mm-hmm. So if you need some parts for foreign sets, we'll have to put you in touch with him. But one question I had for you, though, I know how long you've been doing Third Bay Radio. When did you get interested as a kid? Were you 5? Were you 8? Were you 10? Or was it something that came on you when you were a teenager?
When I was a teenager, I just wanted to be on the radio. So I went to HCCC to be a radio and television broadcaster. And when I got out of work, there was pretty much nothing out there. So I became a DJ in Albany. And then I got bored with that. And I joined the Air Force to repair the radios and the radar on the C-130 aircraft in upstate New York. And I did that for a bunch of years. And but then again, we never really got into the boxes. We were basically pulling boxes and shipping them back for somebody else to work. And then I got out of there. I picked up at Crosley, and I realized, you know, this should be in a museum. They're letting me touch it. I'm like, I guess so. And I started, you know, going through it and replacing the caps. But every time I do a set or someone else's radio, I learn something.
Right.
A little trick that they did, or what is that? Or why is it not working? You have to go through the wire diagram and figure out what's going on. So it's fun. And every time I do something, I learn more. I've been doing it for a while now. So
how many years would you say?
At least 5 to 6 years, maybe 7. But I looked last night. I was looking at my website, and then I have – every time I take a set in I haven't done before, I take pictures inside and out just in case I get confused, which is a good point. If you haven't done a radio before, just take pictures of the chassis inside and out. That way, if you take 2 or 3 caps out and you don't know where they go, you can look at the picture.
Right.
It saved me lots of times before. But anyways, I've got a large collection. I realize I've done at least a couple hundred radios, and I've done at least 5 or 6 jukeboxes. I've worked on Seberg's, the old trash can, 147, which was a pleasure. I've done a couple 100 Cs, the jukebox from Happy Days, and I've done a couple of the jukeboxes from the late 60s and 70s, which I've learned the hard way is a major, major restoration, because there's just a lot to them. And I've learned a lot, and there's so much out there. And you can get your hands on so many good items. You just got to realize what you want and what you like. And
yeah, well, you wind up with having too much to just keep in the third bay. That's the problem. You need about 10 bays. But, you know, the other thing that you talk about is taking photographs. And the digital camera is just, you know, the radio repair guy's absolute best friend in the world. If you ever read... You know, I have a friend down in Pennsylvania who sent me all kinds of popular electronics mags and all these different mags from the 50s and 60s. You know, it was immense the amount of work that some of these guys went to when they were taking apart a set. They were putting colored tags on things so they would remember what did they disconnect from what. And they were trying to, you know, handwritten notes as far as what was taken off of what part and what. And an unbelievable amount of work. And now with, you know, here's the before. Here's when I got the chassis. You know, it is so easy to document. And the great thing is, too, with the internet, you can share all this stuff with people. And it's permanent records. You know, you can keep it in your computer. And, you know, where the old guys used to rely on, you know, manual schematics and riders and Sam's photo facts, which are still very, very valuable. Now, if you have sort of an electronic file and you happen to get the same radio across your bench twice, well, here, I know I had that.
Oh, I have a great story for that. Nice lady sent me a PT-30 Philco, a little tabletop from down from Texas. I opened it up last week, and I opened it up, and I pulled the chassis. It looks all original and touched, so I'm excited. It's going to be nice. It's untouched. It's not broken. I'm looking at everything, and I turn it over to look inside the chassis, and all the capacitors are gone. And I open a little box, and there's a little box with all the original capacitors, and I was like, oh my gosh, someone clipped all the caps out.
What happened? And why? What were they thinking? Like, what were they thinking?
They took them all at once. And usually, if you haven't done a radio, you take them all one by one. That way, you know where it went.
Right. Right.
So, luckily, and this is why I like the digital cameras. Okay, that and the internet just is saving this hobby. I have a picture of a PT-30. I've done many of them, but I'm almost going to do it by memory. But you can have all like the ins and outs of the chassis. So, basically, I'm going to rebuild this lady's radio from my picture, which is not that hard to do. It's an American 5, so it's not a lot. But still, if I didn't have that, I'd be working off a schematic. And schematics are good, but they're not always correct, I'll put it that
way.
Especially, I know sometimes when these came out of the factory, they had what they had on the shelf. So if they had a 0.05 and you don't have anymore, we'll go with the 0.04. And now you're looking for, where's this 0.04 go? And it's not even in the schematic. So you really got to go with what's there. If you can tell it hasn't been finagled by somebody else.
Right. And that's the thing, you know, because if you look through some of these riders, here's the revision. Here's a revision for this, you know, the constant revisions based on the factory got a good deal on this particular tube or this particular capacitor. Or I have this radio, and it's a radio. It has no reason to sound as good as it does, but it's an amazing little set. It's a little Emerson 414. They call it a Big Six. Not that it's very big. Just about 1940, and it's got Loctel tubes. And it's got the regular octal tubes. So you've got a mishmash of tubes. If you look at the chassis, it looks like it was designed for bigger speaker, but they used it for the smaller speaker. Anyway, long story short, factory restored to specifications with a Recone speaker, it sounds absolutely unbelievable. So, you know, there were ways to take sort of a mishmash of stuff that they had, and finance drove a lot of this because they were trying to compete with other manufacturers, compete on price and blah, blah, blah. But it is difficult because sometimes the schematic doesn't always match what the reality was. And it'll drive people absolutely crazy. Some companies were better at it than others. You know, and especially, I guess, Philco had a reputation for making a lot of changes sometimes on the fly.
Yeah, there's
Emerson was notorious for it. They just don't bear any resemblance. So, now, what do you see? It sounds like you see a little bit of everything come through Third Bay as far as small All-American 5s. Some of the consoles. Do you see anything more, any particular brand or style more than another? Or
people love their Zeniths. There's a lot of Philcos out there, and the tabletops are just a wide array out there. The Zeniths, I've done a lot of them. It's kind of you mentioned parts that were kind of changed. The Zenith, if you have a Zenith out there, they have this thing called an ohm bar on the side. It's basically a high wattage resistor, and there's several different sections. And they use a piece of fish paper to go around. And if the inside of the resistor works through that fish paper, it grounds it to the chassis, and then the radio just doesn't work. That's one of those telltale signs with the Zenith. So I always check that, and I replace those with 5-watt resistors. It's such a big array of radios out there and jukeboxes you can find. All I can say is pick one that you really like, and also to look for telltale signs when you go to purchase that particular item. Make sure the transformer's not melted down with lots of tar on the outside.
Right.
And make sure that there's no rat's nest. I know it's like people laugh, but I had this.
No, it's really a common issue. I don't know what it is. Mice and rats seem to love chewing rubber insulation off of anything.
They get into like the smallest thing. How'd they get in there? They seem to get right in there.
Especially things that you find at bond sales or that people have had in garages. You know, my pal Ross has had nightmare stories. I have a friend down in Connecticut who fixes radios for a living, Bob, down at Antique Repair and Restoration, and he maintains that even on the best sets, there are certain manufacturers in certain sets, there's always a fail flaw. There's always a weakness somewhere in there.
Can I say one? That,
yep.
Again, I'm sorry, I hate to harp on the Zenith, but there was a tube called a 6X5, and I just had a nightmare of a time with one, and it was also in a Philco. Please, I was told, I've read on the internet over and over, after one lit up like a Christmas tree on me and melted down a transformer and to a push-pull amplifier. So there is a person out there, I forgot the name, but he sells solid-state 6X5s. If you have a radio with that, please purchase that. That way you can save your original transformer out there, because it will short. The plates inside, I'm told, will short, and your high-voltage line will just melt your transformer down. And transformers are getting harder to come by, and they're expensive to replace, as opposed to a $20 solid-state 6X5.
Right.
So, yeah, just one of those things I want to throw out there.
Well, you know, we've talked before. We had a fellow on, and we talked a little bit about what to look for. So like you were saying, look for a radio that's complete, has all its tubes. If you can look in the back, is the speaker still in there? Is the speaker torn? You know, if the speaker's in good shape, that's a plus. And it's funny, you know, you find a lot of stuff, especially at shows and antique shops, they cut off the cords because they get in the way. So, I mean, you know, and again, these are the things that are more prone to degrade cords. Rubber wiring in certain radios from the 30s is a problem because, you know, the plastic insulation that they used later will stand up much, much better. The rubber wiring might mean you have to replace or have somebody replace every single wire in the set. And it can run into a lot of money and a lot of time, but a lot of people do it. It's a labor of love.
Yeah, it is a labor of love. I noticed certain Philco consoles out there, they have a square dial with a bunch of push buttons on there. I think it's a 380 model, which is a heartbreaker because you open up and they use nothing but the early form of plastic. And it's so badly dried and cracked, and I would never plug it in because I worry about shorting it out. So, like you said, it's very time consuming because you clip one end off and you slide some heat shrink on there, and you have to heat shrink it on. It's not a deal ender, but it's just going to be a lot of labor and a lot of
time intensive. Yeah. Time intensive, and you know, just again to reiterate, we've talked about this. This is the Tube Talk rule number one of anybody who's new to antique radio collecting, or even if you just want to be an antique radio listener. Never, ever take a set that's 40, 50, 60, 70 years old that you find somewhere and plug it in without having it checked out by somebody who's competent, who knows what they're doing. You can find them in Antique Radio Classified. You can find them at Third Bay Radio. You can find them on the resources page on the Radio Attic. If you pick up a newsletter from your local antique radio club, they can tell you who's a good repair resource. You really want to be careful with the stuff. You don't want to injure the set, yourself, or your house. So some things to look out for.
And people always say, why?
Well, you know, because parts degrade over time. Yeah. This doesn't sound like I've said this before. Parts degrade. Capacitors wear out. They leak. Wiring can be gone. Power cords can be frayed. There's lots of different reasons. Yeah, but if you put too much current into a set that isn't ready for it, if there's some good stuff left in there, you can fry it out and really turn it into a nightmare for the repairman.
I always say to a person, it's like finding an old, beautiful 50s car in the garage that hasn't moved. Would you just throw the key in and go for a ride?
Probably not.
Yeah, you're playing with, you know, a little bit of fire there. You know. So, yeah, you're right. It's the capacitors mostly what I'm worried about. If they're there, the capacitors basically just a rolled up piece of paper. It wasn't made to last 40, 50 plus years, so sometimes they just don't hold up and they'll pop like a firecracker, and hopefully, like you said, nothing else will short out. And I'm worried about missing transformers because they do have generic transformers out there, but there's a lot of sets out there that they don't have a transformer. They don't make it. So.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing that's interesting too is, you know, a lot of people say they talk to somebody who might be able to do a repair or restoration for them. They talk a little bit about how much it might cost, and sometimes they shy away a little bit. An important thing to remember, though, is modern Mylar capacitors, you know, the modern components, the things that you use to replace, if you have it done and done right, chances are that's going to last probably longer than you will once the major components that are prone to failure are all replaced and done properly. So don't let that turn you off. I mean, because oftentimes when it's done and it's done right, you're not going to have an issue. As long as AM and shortwave is around, you'll be able to listen.
The one thing I tell my customers is if you ever have a problem with any sets that I've restored, just let me know. Contact me. And I'll guarantee you it's a bad tube, because that's the one thing I can't guarantee is the quality of the tube. The vacuum goes. So I tell my customers, just put them in a box. And I had this happen to me at the antique show up here. And nice older lady talked to me about her dog. It was great. I had a great time. And she turned, I'll take that one. The next year she came back to say hi. She goes, we got a problem with the Zenith. And I go, it played for months fine. But right after Christmas, it died on me. So I told her son, pull them out. It just turns out she shipped them to me. It came in a week. I tested out. I had a bad 6K7 tube. It just broke. Just straight out died. So I put them all back in the box with a brand new 6K7 tube. And she emailed me back and said, it works great. Thank you. So that's the only thing that you got to look out for in the future when you do restorations. It's probably going to be a bad tube, which is easy. I know people get scared, but it's easy, and there's tons of them on the internet. You can find them.
You can do your tube hunting and find which one is bad. And, you know, the other thing, too, that's it's a great aspect of the hobby, and we've talked about this before on the show, and it's the technology that went into a lot of these tubes and the manufacturing skill of some of these companies. You know, the tubes oftentimes are the least of your issues, and I'm sure you've run into this. You pull out an old set, maybe something even from the 30s or 40s. All the tubes test good. They test good to strong. You go through and you do your capacitor work and your wiring work and whatever else that needs attention. You put back in the original tubes, and you might get another few years out of them. Now, these are things that are 50, 60 years old already, and you know what? They'll still play for you.
I've actually had one ricochet across the workshop. I pulled it out, and I tested it, worked fine, put it in the radio when I was done doing the restoration, and it works great. So you're right. It's not the tubes. What really sabotages a tube is the capacitors. They start to
bad voltage, too much, too little,
or none,
runs
or
too
something.
Hot.
That's what really kills a tube, and the occasional vacuum. But I really think, like you said, it's the capacitors starting to fail, and they're not supposed to hum. By the way, everybody's like, oh, I love that old hum when you first turn on.
Usually, you have
a little slight bit,
but it shouldn't be. No,
yeah,
that's not a good sign.
That's
a sign you need to call Joe.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're pleased that Joe is here on Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM. We're happy to have him in the Boston area. So for anybody in this area who might be looking to have something restored once he's thoroughly relocated and reoriented and has freshened up his website, check it out. Give him a call. Send him an email. He'll be glad to help you out. We appreciate you taking your time here to come in tonight.
So
and we appreciate to have you on. And maybe he'll be able to come out to Radio 43. He's got to check his schedule. But for anybody who's coming out, come on by the NEOC table. If Joe's there, we'll point you in the right direction, and we hope to have some fun there. Joe, thanks again for being on. It's been a treat.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Fine, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Great day to see you, great world to be in, sunshine brightly, breeze blowing lightly.
Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay, my, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine head my way. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay,
Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder.
It's the truth, it's actual, everything is satisfactory. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay, wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Fine, how are you?
Fine, how are you? Making a dollar a minute.
Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay, my, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine head my way. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay,
Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder.
It's the truth,
it's actual,
everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay, wonderful feeling, wonderful day.
Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay,
Mr. Bluebird on my shoulder.
It is the truth, it's actual,
everything is satisfactual. Zippity-doo-da, zippity-ay, wonderful feeling hit my way. What a wonderful zippity-doo-da day.
Zippity-doo-da, zippity-day. They probably just got back from a nifty radio swamp meet somewhere and found themselves a really nice old Zenith or a Philco, and they're just so psyched. Well, we're psyched that you're listening. to Tube Talk on WRCA. I hope you enjoyed our guest this evening. It's always great to have somebody a little on the younger edge of the spectrum who's in the hobby with us. So thanks again, Joe, for joining us. Here's the Four Knights.
Georgia, Georgia, Georgia's on my mind. Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Georgia's on my mind. Georgia, Georgia, just a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams I see, the road leads back to you. That I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia, Georgia, going back to Georgia.
Georgia, Georgia, there's no peace that I find. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind.
The Four Knights from 1952. Let's go join Peggy Lee down on Basin Street.
Street. That's the street where the elite always meet down in New Orleans, land of dreams. You'll never know how nice it seems, just how much it really means. It really means. Street Blues. Where I can lose those Mason Street Blues.
Ah, yes. Isn't that just the definition of smooth? So sweet, so soft, so pretty to listen to. And you know, if there's anything I enjoy more than sitting here and playing music like that for you, it's having nice conversation about vintage radios with my guests. And thanks again for joining us. Just to remind you all, you've reached the zenith of the independently produced broadcast experience. Thanks so very much for listening. If you like the program, or if you have a suggestion or comments, please email us at TubeTalk1. That's TubeTalk1@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, gang. We'll see you next time.
When the sun goes down, the tide goes out, the people gather round and they all begin to shout. Hey, hey, how good that it's a treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi mud. It's a treat to beat your feet on the Mississippi mud. What a dance do they do? Lordy, how I'm telling you. They don't need no band. They keep time by clapping their hand. Just as happy as a cow chewing on a cob when the people beat their feet on the Mississippi mud. Lordy, how they play it. Goodness, how they sway it. Uncle Joe, Uncle Jim, pound the mire with vigor and vim. A joy that music thrills me. Boy, it nearly kills me. What a show when they go. Say they beat it up either fast or slow. As happy as a cow chewing on a cob when the people beat their feet on the Mississippi mud. They don't